I don't know if I said, did I once say the story of Alan Labor in the plane with the mincha? Did I never say that story? It's an incredible story. Okay, Nuschus. Mishpatini Nuschus. Okay, so famously, Reb Alan Leib Steinman went to America for this grand Chizuk tour. How many years ago? It was about 10, 15 years ago. Yeah, no, must be more than 10 years ago. Reb Gideon, when was it? Reb Alan Leib Steinman went to America. With the Gerebbe, that's right. He went with the Gerebbe and a Busha Weiss. Okay, so now there was a very rich, very, very rich man that I believe his name was Mr. Shimshon. Name is going to come back to me. Very, very rich individual who heard about this grand tour. Alan Leib Steinman going to America to visit some of the very, very large kahilas in America. So he owns a private jet. He owns a private jet, like probably you got prep. It's parked at, yeah. It's in Luton, yeah. So he heard about this, and he said he would like to make his private jet available for Alan Leib Steinman's trip with the Ger Rebbe to fly across to, and he has this kind of private jet that can take a non-stop flight from Eretz Yisrael to America. I don't know if all the jets can do it, but his could, okay. So he said he was more than happy with his chus. The condition is that he'd like to fly with. Fair enough, that's a fair request. He says he's making available his private jet for the Tukadoy Le'adoy to fly. And so Alan Leib Steinman, I actually saw once a picture of Alan Leib Steinman, it's quite fascinating. Alan Leib Steinman was very makbit because he was makbit not to lean, not to recline. He never leaned. I remember seeing that. The Alan Leib Steinman, he didn't have an armchair, not a couch, but his very, very simple chair, you know, the plastic chairs that are like, you know, these flimsy plastic chairs? So he had one of those, and he wouldn't lean back on it. He was in his 90s, he wouldn't lean back on it. You try not to lean back for an hour or two, it's impossible. I tried it once, it's impossible. Apparently, because he said there's so many tzoros in Klal Yisrael. There's so many tzoros, there's all kinds of issues in Klal Yisrael. So he doesn't want to lean back. He can't lean back. It's like his share of the incredible. Mamash incredible. He's in his 90s. He wouldn't lean back for years. So I saw once a picture in the private jet. The man Leib Steinman in his private jet. And here you go in this massive leather polster, like this massive, huge, you know, in the private jet thing. And the man Leib Steinman was like crunched over like this, you know, like with a set of mishnas in front of it. And he wouldn't lean back. He wouldn't lean back. He just wouldn't lean back. So the story goes like this. And this very rich person was in the plane with him. And then they were a bit on a high, in two ways, in the literal way. So when they were flying, and this Aman Leib had now given chizik to tens of thousands of Yidden, Godel Hadur, together with the Gereb, and they were flying. And then they asked, he said, you know, he was in a very generous mood. He's going to ask Alan Leib, what can he do for him? What can he wants to offer him. So he went up to Alan Leib Steinman when he was like eating something, just a few minutes break of the learning. So I asked Alan Leib, what can I give you? You live in such a humble little place. You didn't even own air conditioning. Didn't if anybody was zoiche. I think apparently online you can see Alan Leib Steinman's flat, the way it looked like. Incredible, almost incredible. Really completely, we wouldn't cope in such a flat. The mattress, I saw the mattress was literally like this thick, and that's where he slept on. So he asked him, you know, I'd like to offer you something. What can I give you? Here's a brand new air conditioning unit, or is it, you know, a new table and chairs, or what can I give you? Such a offer, you know, like a genuine offer, really meant to offer. So Alan Steinman looked at him, and he says, can it be really expensive? And then he said, sure, yeah, definitely. So he said, can it be $15,000? $15,000, that's not something expected from Alan Leib Steinman. Can it be $15,000? So he says, definitely. A bit astonished, but yeah, definitely, $15,000. So what could Alan Leib want, which costs $15,000? So he told him like this. He said, definitely, I'll give it to you. So Alan Leib explained, so I understand we're flying now. Over the Atlantic, Atlantic. It's not the Pacific, it's Atlantic, right? Yeah, the Atlantic. And we have a non-stop flight, And I understand that the flight is like 8-9 hours, or could be more than that, 10 hours. How long is it from Eretz Yisrael to America? It's about, must be, from here it's about 8 hours. So it's about 10 hours. Must be about 10 hours, yeah? Okay, so this is about 10 hours. It is that mincha, we'll have to have mincha. We'll have to have mincha in the plane, inevitably. And I understand that, so I heard that to get a permission to land in an airport somewhere in Spain or midway, I don't know where, to land, you need, you need a permission to land. And taxiing, the fees and all the charges that are when landing, plus refueling and everything, apparently to get all that costs about $15,000. And it really would mean a lot to me to dine with a minion. Okay. It really would mean a lot to me to dine with a minion. Instead, I never dine on my own. And I really, you know, we're only four of us or five of us in the plane over here. And if you really want to treat me with something, I really would like to land halfway in Spain and get a minion and dine mincha with a minion. And they did it. An expensive mincha indeed. Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible. If you would be offered $15,000, would you go for mincha? What would you do? Yeah, incredible. Yeah. Pardon? You don't have to. Apialochi Taka don't have to. Oh, very good question. Yeah, you shouldn't spend so much. Good question. It's a very good question. You shouldn't spend so much money, such a fortune on a minion. It's a good question. I don't know the answer. It's probably, for him, it's not a chaymesh. I think that it's for him, because such a rich person, it's not a large amount. Yeah. Okay. In schos of Mr. is your story. It's in your schos. Okay. Dina Heulech Bamid Baba Shabbos. Rabbi said this last sermon. We have to. First, we'll start with Eovin. We are in Simon Shin Nun Ches, page 424, and we'll be learning a little bit about a bit more about this Kafifois. Top of page 424. Bottom of Chitz Alarishonos. So we're talking about do you remember the walls could be sometimes a problem around the calf of Shalahuk of Ladira? Why could a wall not help? How could you have a wall around the calf and you still can't carry in it? How could it be? If the wall was... How can you have a fence around the calf and you can still not carry in the calf? Because, and even if people are living there, it could be that the fence was made before. So it's a kafah shalokul adira. Mechitza doesn't help. Now, in this seif now, we're going to be discussing a following situation. Pona mechitza ala rishoyno le'akif al-yodim ladir. You had a fence around the kafah, but this fence didn't help for carrying because the fence was made before people lived there. So people thought, you know what? I'm not going to destroy this fence, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to put an additional mechitza on top of it. Do you know, have you noticed when you go to the coastal? Have you been to the coastal? You were by the coastal. Yeah, do you remember there's a few the stones in the bottom? Do you remember? They are different than the stones on top. Do you know that? Yeah, you've noticed it. Because it was made much, much later. Different kufas. So that's what's happening over here. Her fence was made around the cafe, but that was made long before people lived there. So that fence ain't going to help. But those people now, they put an additional floor of fence on top of that. So a fence on top of the initial fence. Does that work or not? Because this fence now is made after it took of Lydia, so that should work. But does it work or not? Because there is an initial fence in the first place. Very nice, Shaila. Says the Shulchan Aruch. Bona mechitza al-rishono. If somebody put fences on the first fence, la'akifoi al-yodom ledira, and this should serve as a surrounding fence, which helps us to make it that it is hook of ladir and hence permitted to carry within the area. That will not help. No, it's not good enough. It's not good enough because there was a fence there in the first place. So that's tough luck. You have to take them down. But what happens if the first mechitzas were swallowed up? Nivlu, they were swallowed up. And the Mishnah explains in Sefkot Nun Zayin, that the fence got like kind of absorbed in the sand, or got absorbed in the mud. Do you know, did you notice that sometimes the, do you have, in your back garden, do you have fences to your neighbor? Like back fence? Have you noticed that if you keep them there for a long time, you've got the stone, I don't know the right words, the poles, and then you've got the wooden partitions. There must be better words than do you know what I mean? So when you notice after a few years, they sink a little bit. Have you noticed that? They sink, no? Yeah. They sink, right? So that's exactly what we're talking about over here. Sometimes, do you know what I mean? The partition will go down because the earth will swallow it. It will sink into the earth over the years. So that's what's happening over here. If the low ones were swallowed up, they would sank in the earth. And the top ones remained. So now you've got the top ones, but you do not have any more the low ones. That will help now. So the top ones, if the low ones have sunk, the top ones will help. But if you've got a tail, you've got this mound, which is greater than Sosaim, and you put mechitzas, even on the edge of it, which is for dira purpose, that does help. So the example will be, imagine you've got this hill. Can I just show you with my hand? You've got this hill, which is like this, and that is now a kafef, which you're not allowed to carry. Now, you have around it, you have one layer of fence, but now on top of that, you made an extra layer of fence. Now, here's Shulchan Aruch is saying that helps. Do you know why? Why is it? You've got a hill, one layer of fence, which is no good, and the top layer of fence, which is good, that helps. Why is that? Because when you're standing on the hill, that's the fence that you're seeing. And therefore, that helps. Yeah. Yeah. So the people start living there between the construction of both fences. And that helps because since you are in the airspace in the avir of both mechitzas, that helps and that. And therefore, that will allow you to carry in the kafef. Sif tests. Now, Rabbi says sif tests is really, really, really important. And it's a matter of great controversy and discussion amongst the poskim. What do you think if there is trees in the... Imagine there is a park or a garden in the kafef. A park, Rabbi say a park in a kafef. Well, if you've got a park in an eruv area, is that considered a kafef shehukav ledira or kafef shaloi hukav ledira? I know that if there's a house, so I know that's fine. I can carry there if there's a that's fine. That's hukav ledira. I also know that if it's for storage and there's an area there, there's a rishus yochid which is just for storage area, I know that's a kafef shaloi hukav ledira. I'm not allowed to carry. But I want to know, what if there's trees there, there's a garden there, there's a park there? I want to know, if there's a park, is that considered hukav ledira or lo hukav ledira? We're now trying to define what is considered hukav ledira. Rabbi Yisrael Nafkamina will be Edgerbury Park. Edgerbury Park. Is that a kafef shaloi hukav ledira or not? Is there fence around Edgerbury Park?
Not all around.
That's
why it's not near.
Okay.
If you look at it from the other side of the A41, you know the A41 side, the bit of it that kind of not borders the A41, but that's not fenced properly. No, it's indiscriminate. There's some fencing, there's some not fencing.
Okay, can we just take on its fence for a minute? Yeah, I want to ask. Imagine it's fenced properly. Would you say you're allowed to carry that? Yes or no? Is this considered a kaf of shaloi hukav ledira? This is probably the most important question when it comes to kafifos and eruvin. If you've got a park, is that a problem or not? Nobody lives there. Does dira mean living? Or perhaps you'd argue it means...
Or you have a coffee shop there.
a coffee shop. Very good. So the coffee shop is a crucial point, because what you're pointing out is that perhaps you don't have to physically live there, sleep there. Perhaps you're saying that's not called dia. But he's saying that perhaps it is dia. Who says you need to sleep there? Perhaps you define a calf of shahuk of ladia if it's for purpose. Would you say that if somebody's got a very large back garden, and there is chairs there and fences and a water fountain spritzing, and there is this, what else fancy things can be in there? Would you say that it's not open the deer? You'd still say this is the deer, this is his dwelling. That's where it goes for his...
The garden would usually be fenced all the way
around. Yeah.
Is that the main point?
We're talking about if it's fenced. If it's not fenced, then it's a carmelist in the first place. We're talking about calf has to be fenced. So this is the crucial seif over here that we're going to discuss this. Calf of Yosem Sosaim. You've got a calf, which is great in Sosaim. Shuk of Ladir, not a rubo ilonois, and you have planted trees there. Even if it is not lines in a very consistent manner, but it's a bit all over the place. Einum avatle madir will not cancel dira, so you can have trees there, and that's fine. Yes, trees will not make it into non-hook of ladira. Trees is there for people to walk around, and that's fine. And the Mishnah Berurah explains they've gotten samechay tavida inchel in toilonos. People do plant trees bechatzeros in there. Gardens, kedeli, stoifa, betzilon, to enjoy the shade. Yes, a park is hook of ladira, that's fine. But if it's planted, what about plant, if it's planted? What if it's planted? If people plant seeds, what about that? Is that hook of ladira or not? So here it's different, because you don't want people to step on it. And since you don't want people to step on it, so it's no hook of ladira. Avalim is a ruboy, but if it's planted, primarily planted, and you don't want people to step on it, hazroy mevatel madira, yes, the seeds will be mevatel ladira. Afilim boy melam sasaim, if it's just sasaim. Yeah, and nizom yut, but if some of it only is planted, you've got an area within it that you're planting. Imein boy lo sasaim muta, yosim sasaim also, and then if it's only a little bit, then we cancel it up. And it depends if you've got yosim sasaim or not. So if it's a little bit planted, that wouldn't be a problem. But if a substantial proportion of this area is planted and you're not allowed to step on it, you're not meant to step on it, it's going to be considered a problem, and it would be considered kaf of shaloi huk of ladira. Okay, we'll discuss this more because it's very noigal tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. Okay, and now we're reaching the last simon in Hilchos Shabbos. I think it's so interesting that the last simon, page 388, is about hoilich b'midbar b'Shabbos, about somebody who goes in a desert. Somebody who goes in a desert on Shabbos. Let's see what aloche is. Somebody's in a desert. Somebody goes in a desert. He's lost count. He doesn't know if it's Tuesday, Thursday, Shabbos. He doesn't know which day it is. What are you going to do? Moin shivas yomim. You count 7 days. Do you know what? There's a tshuva that happened. There's a tshuva it's so interesting. Imagine somebody, there's a tshuva in Avozna speaks about a tshuva, a yid, that goes on the holidays in a remote place. Actually, I think it's a yid in Australia. He went to the holidays, and he was there for a good few weeks holidays with his family and his close relative, and he simply lost cheshbon. We're not going back 500 years ago, we're going back 10, 20 years ago, and he's lost count, and he literally kept, he somehow felt he was there for a couple of weeks. And the first week he kept normal, but then in the middle of the week they lost cheshbon, and Shabbos, full proper normal family, and they kept Shabbos on Sunday. And Shabbos, they were busy preparing for Shabbos. What was really Shabbos, they thought was Friday. And they were completely mechal Shabbos, right, left and center, throughout Shabbos, and on Sunday, Yoyim HaShishi, Vayichol HaShemayim. And only once the Goyshe milkman came, or the Goyshe, I don't know what it was, not milkman, the Goyshe, he said, "Oh, you keep Sunday too." He said, "You keep Sunday too." He says, "What do you mean?" He said, "So it turned out." And then the tshuva that was of Ozna was that what did he do about tshuva and kapora, and what did he do about it because they were mechal Shabbos, and that's an interesting tshuva. So I'm saying that it's not so remote. It doesn't have to go back so many hundreds of years ago. What happens with somebody who's hoilich b'midbar and he lost count? He doesn't know which day it is. So the halacha is, don't know when it's Shabbos. Moni shivas yomim, count 7 days. From the day that you've actually lost count, you start counting 7 now. On the day you realized, you start counting 7. And on the 7th day, you make Shabbos. You make Kiddush, and you make Havdalah after that. What are your thoughts on that? You count 7 days? Pardon?
Someone in seven.
Why do you mean he's gone? He's one in seven.
It's not counting 7 days. It's one in seven.
But you don't. You say that it's unlikely that it's punked. It doesn't. It could be. He's lost count. So the background. The background of this halach is as follows. There's a 1/7 chance. No, GCC maths. How much? 1/7 percentage.
1/7. It's a very, very horrible factor, isn't it? What is it?
1/7.
Almost 15%.
14%. Approximately 15%. So it's 15%. Approximately 15% for every day for to be. Yeah. The next 7 days. It's every day is equal to 15%. Approximately 14.2% chance that it, but so it's but the halacha is that we don't want to just say okay 14% is probably not today, 14% is probably not tomorrow, and the following day like this you're gone for the until you return to safe shores. No, you can't do that. So because we want a person to keep a Shabbos, shloit ishtakach mishnebu seif cotton. Mishnebu seif cotton gimel kiddush v'avdola. The haynu she'oise kiddush al hapas v'yayin kedin. You make a proper kiddush. Hem chalas wine etc. V'tiknu chachomim zeli zikoron. It is meant as zikoron. It's not a mathematical cheshbon. It makes the most sense on the seventh day. No. It's just because we've got to establish one day as Shabbos. Otherwise, he's going to completely forget how to keep Shabbos. That he shouldn't forget Torah Shabbos. Now, I don't believe there's anywhere else such a concept. Here's the issue. That is, but it's just we have to insist that every week, a person must do Shabbos once. You can't just go for weeks and weeks and weeks without putting on the shtamel, right? So you have to have once week of Shabbos. So that's Shalot Yishtakach Torah Shabbos. And you have to do Avdol after that. Now, it's true. What are you saying? That it's a remote chance? It is, but Shalot Yishtakach Torah Shabbos. What were you saying? That? You say that it's more likely to be number 5 or number 6? Yeah. The truth is, your svara does come up in a minute because your svara. Hold on a sec, because we're going to say your svara with regards to Yisrael Malacha. We're going to say your svara in a minute. V'imeila mamaleis panes, and if a person doesn't have any food, also the last malacha. Sorry, v'imyesh lemaleis panes. If a person has got sufficient food, he has got panosa, meaning he's got what to live off. He's got money. He's got food. He's not allowed to do any melachas. Not today, not tomorrow, not the next day. Not the following day, not the subsequent day. Until he's got no food left. And then it becomes pikuach nefesh. And then he's got to deal with it. But every day, it's a chance, perhaps it's Shabbos. So, he's got any panos that he can do. Any panos he can do. If he's doing business trade with his convoy, he's like trading things or whatever he may be doing. He's cooking for the olam, whatever it is. He cannot do this, not today, perhaps it's Shabbos. Can't do it tomorrow, perhaps it's Shabbos. But then he reaches, after a bit of time, he's going to reach a stage that it's pikuach nefesh. I have no food. I'm hungry. So then, ve'oz yaseh melocha b'chol yom, then you can do melocha every day. Hafilu b'yom shem kaddish, but even on the day, that is the seventh day that he's going to make kiddish. Kedei panasosim etzumtzem, it's only as much as needed. So only trade, only cook, only make as much as needed. But you can walk and carry on and join the convoy and walk more than 2,000 amos every day. Even on the day you make Kiddush. Fascinating halacha. What do you tell about this, Rabbi Yisai? What are your thoughts on this? Pardon? So Me'ikar Adin they kept one day. Yes, some Achmirim kept in Shanghai. Some people kept 2 days Shabbos, but only those Shivas. Reb Chatzkel did. Some of them did, but the Bochim on the whole they kept one Shabbos. Yeah. What? There's a question. Bialoch asked a fascinating question. What do you say is better? every day you're allowed to do melachas. Every day you're only allowed to do melachas. How much? As much to survive. But once you're doing a melacha, why don't you say, do already more melacha, and then you're going to have more money, and tomorrow you won't have to do Chilul Shabbos in the first place. At all. It does not make more sense. What is better, to do every day a little bit of Chilul Shabbos, just to survive, or is it better to do every second day more Chilul Shabbos, and then you've got sufficient for the next day? Bialocha's question. Oh, that's Bialocha's answer. Very good. That's exactly, he said it's not Pikuach Nefesh then. You can't do more than what required because it's not Pikuach Nefesh. That's exactly what Bialocha says. Exactly that. Chafetz Chaim says, Mamash, that. The question or the answer? Okay, every day. Let's say that his Parnassah is, he cooks. That's his Parnassah. That's how he's got a whole convoy over here of hundreds of goyim. His Parnassah is that he cooks. So now the question is, okay, now he's got a bit of money, he's eating a bit of food, so he's not allowed to cook now because it could be Shabbos. Tomorrow as well, he's not allowed to cook because it's perhaps Shabbos. Okay, comes to a point that he's hungry and he needs money. So now it's Pikuach Nefesh. So now he's allowed to cook. Could be it's Shabbos, could be it's not Shabbos, but he's allowed to cook because of Pikuach Nefesh. How much is he allowed to cook? Just enough to survive or more than that? So Shulchan Aruch says he's allowed to do as much just sufficient to survive. So the question is, why is that better? Why don't we say, cook more already. Today you're cooking, cook ready loads. And like this, for the next 3 days, you won't have to cook. You won't have to do Chilul Shabbos for the next few days. That was the question. Pilach's question. And Binyamin answers, because you can only do as much every day, as much as the Pikuach Nefesh. More than that, you can't do. It's better to do many small Pikuach Nefesh than... Yeah. And see, so bases your point, Reb Gideon. So it bases your point, and we'll finish off with that. If you know about leaving the day you left, in other words, you know today's the fourth day, or the fifth day, the day I've left. Now, I don't know exactly which day. I don't know if I left on a Tuesday or on a Wednesday, but I know it's the fourth day. So the halacha is as follows. You can always work out the eighth day from the day I left. Why? Because the day, if I know this is my fourth day that I left, it's my sixth day of my journey, then on the eighth day you can certainly do melacha because I certainly didn't leave on Shabbos. I didn't leave on Shabbos. וכן ביום 15, 15th, ביום 10, 2, וכן לעולם on the 22nd, etc. The day that I left was certainly not Shabbos. That resembles a bit your Svarib Gid, you know? That the day that you know, that if you know for sure one day is not Shabbos, then that day you are takelah to do melacha. Yeah, okay. Now, the shaila is, with regards to, the shaila is, it's very interesting that you're allowed to, why are you allowed to walk? Why are you allowed to walk on every day more than 2,000 amas? Why are you allowed to walk? Shulchan Aruch says, Muta leilich b'chol yoyim. You're allowed to walk every day. Surely, if it's Shabbos, you're allowed to walk more than 2,000 amas. Why is it permitted? Yeah, because we want you to get out of there. More than anything, we want you to get out of there. The quicker they get out of there, the quicker you know when the real Shabbos is. And that's why it's Muta. That's the only melacha that is really permitted unconditionally, is to carry on walking. Now, why is this the last siman of Hilchos Shabbos, Rabbi Yisai? Why is this the last siman of Hilchos Shabbos? Yeah, you're right. But that's really a different chelik in its own. You're right. But in terms of Hilchos Shabbos, Lamatas Melachos, why is this the last one? I want to say what I think. My svar is because there is a concept of Shtakech Torah Shabbos. That this person now, we want him to, you don't know when Shabbos is really, but we're asking him, you have to keep a Shabbos. Because a Yid, Shtakech Torah Shabbos, every Yid needs to know that there is a Shabbos coming. And a person must consciously be aware that every week is a Shabbos and constantly think about it. And that's really something that after learning Hilchos Shabbos, all Chelek Gimel, something which we totally internalize, must internalize that. A person has to all week think about Shabbos and realize and think about the Shabbos. And that's why Din Hoylech Bamidbar Shabbos is quite appropriate to be the last simon for us to internalize this Yesod. I wish you a very good evening.